The unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Well, it's been a tough week in samsara, it would seem. It's been just awful things happening out in the world, in our country, out in other countries. It's just been dreadful. People have been angry, they're fearful, reactive, grief-stricken, and it's really hard to see and you know, what do we do? How can we help? That's what you think. How can I help this? It seems kind of hopeless. Our first bodhisattva vow says, however innumerable beings may be, I vow to save them all. How can we possibly do this? Even a few beings, how can we save even a few beings in this sort of, you know, suffering that's going on? But then the next vow gives us a clue. However inexhaustible the passions may be, I vow to transform them all. Going out to save beings doesn't always work so well. We need to do it with wisdom, not just kind of bash out and do something. Not just acting on our feelings of, you know, grief and injustice and looking for ways to save beings so we can feel better. It's not that. We have to do it with wisdom. Achalanatha, sit still in the midst of the fires of greed, anger and delusion. Wonderful help. Greed, desire. It works on the inside, you know, our own desires, our own personal desires, that's what you want. And also, when you think of the world, wanting things to be different, wanting things to be the way I think they should be. And even this altruistic wanting things to be better for beings, which we all want. You need wisdom to see clearly what actually is helpful to do or not do, you know. Not just kind of rush off and do something out of pain or fear or anger. Anger, outrage, you know. Hatred of people who hate other people is easy to do, you know. Judgment, righteous anger, it's still anger. You know, as the Buddha said 2,500 years ago, hatred does not cease by hatred, you know. By love alone does it cease, or at the least, not hating in return. That's the only way to hate people because they hate somebody else or because they hate you does not help at all. Delusion, ignorance and fear. We fear what we don't know. Fear and prejudice based on ignorance. When we know people, we don't have that prejudice. It's because we don't know people that we have prejudice and hatred. We may not even be aware of prejudice or aware of our fears, but they're there, and we need to look and see. These are some of the passions that we're trying to transform. They may be well-intentioned, but they may not be very skillful. They may just add to the fire. We rush out, you know, with our little sword of righteousness to do stuff. It's not a matter of what do I want or what do I think is good even, what I think is good, or seeking an outlet for our grief and worry and fear and so forth. It's a matter of sitting still. What is good to do here? What needs to be done? What's best for everybody? Not what do I want, what do I think is best. What's really best? To sit still. Achalanatha, sitting still, immovable. The immovable one is what Achalanatha means. He shows us the way to stillness in the midst of the flames of greed, anger and delusion. No matter how personal our flames may be, my own stuff, we have that as well, or my own inner turmoil, the things that have happened to me, my own angsts and fears, desires, miseries, woes, losses, and all those, plus just looking at the world. To sit still in the midst of these fires of passion, right in the middle of them, not feeding the fire with vengeance or resentment or fear or righteousness or, you know, they did this and then they did that and so forth. And not trying to suppress the fire or pretend it's not there. We may be upset. We probably are. We can be upset. Often we're very upset about things that happen to us, or things that happen in the world. And not to pretend it isn't so, but to learn to sit still in the midst of it, looking clearly at it. Actually, another doesn't have his eyes shut. Sometimes he has one eye pointing one way and one eye pointing the other. Or maybe he can see more that way, I don't know. But he's not asleep, he's awake, very much awake. And this stillness is not indifference, it's compassion. Achalanatha is a manifestation of Avalokiteshvara, a manifestation of compassion. And always I keep telling a story because I love it about Avalokiteshvara. This is an old story, hundreds or thousands of years old. Avalokiteshvara has made this vow to save all beings and says that if he doesn't do this, if he fails in his vow, he will shatter into 1,000 pieces. So he helps beings for thousands and billions of years, and then looks down and everything is just as bad as it was. And he despairs, thinks he's broken his vow, and shatters into 1,000 pieces. And the Amida Buddha looks down and says, well, this won't do. And he glues them back together, and he gives him 1,000 hands and 1,000 eyes to help him in his job. And the Avalokiteshvara's heart, the heart of compassion, becomes Achalanatha, the scowling, fearful, fierce one. Because sometimes niceness doesn't work. You need a bit of a thump. Sometimes compassion comes in the form of great fierceness, great suffering. You know, we have to learn something. But why I tell this story is because this story is an old one. For thousands of years, people have been seeing suffering and ready to fall into 1,000 pieces out of despair because the suffering is so great everywhere they look. Now we have the internet and it's worse. Well, in some ways it seems worse because we see it more. But it may be it's just the way it always was. Always is Avalokiteshvara helping beings with 1,000 hands and 1,000 arms. Always is Achalanatha showing us the way to stillness in the midst of that. Always there are Buddhas and Bodhisattvas helping beings, and never to let go of that thought, never to think it's all hopeless and there is no help for us. There is always the positive aspects of training, people just quietly helping beings, doing their best in a quiet way. So to have that story, I think, is a very helpful thing. Yes, there's always been suffering, always been lots of it, and now we see it clearly. And sometimes it seems worse than others. Rav Master used to say, sometimes the sanity level goes down, and then it comes back up again. Well, I think we're at a pretty low ebb at the moment. And it may go down further, but it will eventually come back up. And what we can do is to sit still best we can, offer merit, and do our best to help where help is needed, with wisdom as you can see it. Achalanatha is not just sitting on his rock by himself. Here I am, I'm a rock, I'm an island kind of thing. He's not indifferent to the rest of us. We're not indifferent. This is, as I said, compassion in a fierce form. He's there to help us. All his attributes are there to help us. His fierce aspect, not always gentle and kind, as I said, sometimes compassion comes in the form of suffering, you know. We do something really dumb, we suffer. This is actually compassion, otherwise you wouldn't learn anything. And if you can accept it and say, that's why I'm suffering, because of this. Maybe I'll stop doing this. Maybe I'll do something different. Maybe I can learn, apologize, you know, regret for our mistakes, honestly trying to do better. It's not easy, it can be really hard, but that's compassion. His hair plaited down one side. Acharnatha's hair is like kind of like this in all of the things, plaited down like this. It represents his coming down, compassion coming down to help beings. It's kind of nice, you know. Here's this great big fierce guy, and there's the little plaited hair thing, compassion coming down to help us. The sword of wisdom cutting through delusion so we can see more clearly. We can sit still and see more clearly what needs to be done. Act with wisdom, not just rush off and do something, but act with wisdom where it's needed. Helping where help is needed, acting where action is needed, sitting still where it's better to sit still and not do something. You know. Sometimes hard to do. The rope, the precepts, which is holding out for us, is not pushing it on us, not forcing us to take it, holding it out, offering it to us. This will help you. The precepts help us to relinquish creating suffering for ourselves and other beings. All these things help us. And there are many other attributes, but I won't get into them all. But they're there to help us. The third bodhisattva vow, however limitless the Dharma may be, I vow to comprehend it completely. We comprehend the Dharma, we understand it, not just by reading books about it, but by putting it into practice, keeping to the precepts, sitting still, practicing the four wisdoms, charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy. The four wisdoms. Anyone can practice these. You don't have to think you're wise to practice kindness, generosity, benevolence, tenderness, sympathy. We can all do it, which is a wonderfully helpful thing. We feel for other beings who are suffering. We feel our own suffering. To sit still is not to be indifferent. The four wisdoms are not just feelings. But we don't want to get pulled into emotionalism and judgment. Charity, tenderness, benevolence and sympathy, they have feeling there, but it's not judgment. This person deserves sympathy and that one doesn't. It's sympathy for everybody, trying to understand everybody's point of view. What's everybody, you know, included in this? Wisdoms, the stillness there. And that helps us to see more clearly where we need to do something. Because stillness is not a passive thing, it's dynamic. Sometimes it's really hard to sit still in a difficult situation. You know, you're not just hanging out there, as we know. You know, sometimes sitting still is really hard. When there's turmoil within us and turmoil in the world, it can be really hard. And yet, that is the way to help ourselves and help other beings. That is the way to practice the Dharma, to sit still. Then we can see how to keep the precepts, how to practice the four wisdoms, the six paramitas, all these things of the Dharma that we hear about and try to practice. We don't just read about them so we can make lists. We try to put them into practice. The fourth bodhisattva vow. However infinite the Buddha's truth is, I vow to realize it. To realize the Buddha's truth is to practice it, and to practice it is to realize it, to act on it. And the truth is, part of this truth is, that we are not separate beings. We're not little isolated bubbles in this world. We're not isolated from each other. We're all deeply connected. No matter how you may feel, no matter what it may look like, we are all intimately connected with each other. Connected to everybody else, connected to all other things, all beings, all trees, all rocks and grasses, worms, centipedes, sharks, everything. And if you can kind of bear that in mind, it really helps us to see kind of the bigger picture and not get swept up too much in the turmoil of seeming difference. Because everything seems to be everybody acting on me and my view. Just, you know, we're all made of the same stuff. Physically and spiritually, we're all made of the same stuff. We're not separate, we're not isolated. We may feel isolated, but we're not really. And to bear that in mind and to do our best to live from that is wisdom. The way to the end of suffering. We don't do this perfectly, but we can sure have a good stab at it. Do our best. Because the cause of all our suffering and turmoil is feeling that we're separate, feeling that we're not a part of everything and everybody else, feeling like a separate me, feeling that my little group is separate from that little group over there, that my opinions and views are right and that their views and opinions are wrong, and therefore we are divided. My culture, my race, my background, my origins, my social class, my education, my gender, my everything we can think of is right. And the others are wrong. And therefore we're divided. You know. Or that my culture, my gender, and my everything else is wrong. And they're right. And we're divided. Not understanding each other. And not seeing that actually we're all just part of one being. Because fundamentally, it's the feeling of personal isolation, not just my group, but little me, even me within my group, you know. We all have these feelings and so forth, but I have my own little horriblenesses and quirks, and if they knew how awful I was, they wouldn't want to have me around, or whatever it might be. Everybody, I think, comes from that feeling of personal isolation to some extent. Some of us more than others. Some of us deeply so. Some of us less so. And if we keep undermining that illusion of separateness, of being a separate, suffering little me that nobody understands, and I can't understand anybody else, if we can just kind of chip away at that, you know, because that's what what's at the bottom of it, or always this self, that's at the bottom of the thing, it's always this self at the bottom, feeling I'm a separate self. Versus everybody else, kind of thing. And therefore, I feel afraid. My little group versus everybody else. Therefore, we feel afraid. If I'm afraid because I feel separate. We are afraid because we feel separate. A group feels afraid of another group because they feel separate. If we felt that we were all one being trying to get along, boy, would that help, you know? We're a little ways from that. If we really knew that we're all just one body, one big, great body, just little cells of that body, we wouldn't need to be afraid. You know, a hand wouldn't need to be afraid of a foot. And even when there's great danger and turmoil and reason to feel afraid, we would feel much less fear knowing that we are just part of that one body and that the universe is not about me and what I want and my fears and my wanting to be comfortable or safe or have what I think is best. But that we all just, could we just get along, you know? Because we're all just a big, just a little part of that great body, just a part of everything. And if we were to see this, or at least act from this, as though we knew it was so, we'd be able to see beyond our immediate situation, our immediate views, desires. This is the way I think things should be, you know, our own interests. And see with true wisdom, because it's this little self thing, feeling of being a little self, that skews our view in so many ways and makes us afraid. And if we didn't have that, we wouldn't need to fear. However, it's not that easy. We have to practice it. We have to work at it. We have to keep coming back to stillness, which helps us to see it's not about me. It's not just me and what I want. However infinite the Buddha's truth is, I vow to realize it. The truth that we are not little separate selves, not little separate me's, not separate beings at all. We're all just part of one being. And to live by this, to begin to see it, then we really are helping to save beings in our own little way. No matter how innumerable beings may be, we are helping to save them all. I don't have to do it by myself. I'm just a little cell anyway. But we can do our bit to live from that as best we can. When we find ourselves in turmoil, nearly always we're seeing with just one eye. If one eye, maybe not even any eye. When we feel that, when we're afraid, when we're angry, when we're outraged, yes, there may be reason for it, but it's not the truth. It's not the fundamental thing. And how do we help? Not by, you know, marching about getting upset, but sitting still. We may need to take action. Some of us are more activist than others, and that's good. And yet we don't want to do it from anger and small views, or I'm right and they're all wrong. But to do it from kindness, from compassion, and with that bigger view, how can we help us all to get along? Not how can my view prevail, how can we all get along? How can we help? And if we're not activist, to sit still and offer merit and loving kindness and understanding, trying to understand. When one being sits in stillness and doesn't act out of fear and hatred and turmoil and so forth, it has a great impact on everybody. Great Master Dogen says, just the meditation of one being, just for a few minutes, even not very good meditation, has a huge impact, further than we can imagine. And as we try to do that, it can really help our world. Then we think of great beings like Mahatma Gandhi and Nelson Mandela and all these other people who've made this huge impact on people by actually coming from stillness and compassion. They weren't doing nothing, they were active, but they would try to do it with wisdom and kindness and bringing people together rather than creating hatred and violence and separation. And they have a huge influence on our world. And there's all these other beings doing the same thing in their own little way, people just sitting still and not reacting, even in small situations, even in the little domestic irritation or in our own mind, not kind of creating turmoil, but just sitting still and refraining from anger and hatred and fear as best we can. People are everywhere doing this. We're trying to do this. Trying not to repay hatred with hate, but with wisdom and compassion. This is what we try to do in our practice. And we do this. Every time we sit down to meditate, we're trying to do this, to sit with stillness and not violence, to sit still with our feelings and our fears and our views and opinions and grief and all that. To sit still in the midst of all the conditions, our inner conditions and our own lives and our own mind and the outer bigger conditions. To sit still in all of that. Every time we sit down to meditate, every time we try to sit still in a difficult situation and not get mad or biting or fearful or whatever, every time we try to understand somebody else's point of view, whether in a small way or a big way, to hear what they have to say and understand what they're trying to tell me. How do they see this? It's amazing what you can learn when you hear. You know, sometimes it's hard to hear what somebody has to tell you. And yet, we have to hear it. To see where our own biases lie, our own blind spots, our own views that we thought were perfect and right and good. Maybe they're not always perfect. Maybe somebody else has a view that is just as good. And maybe there's something beyond all views that is true wisdom. I think so. And that is what we're trying to fathom, live from, understand for ourselves. Achalanatha, the bringer of peace, lovely. For us to sit still in the midst of all conditions with a heart of compassion and wisdom as best we can, this is to bring peace to ourselves and just a little bit of peace to our world. And may we never doubt this, never despair or give up or think everything is lost. There's Avalokiteshvara thousands of years ago, falling into despair because the world was still full of suffering. Well, it's still full of suffering, but now he's got 1,000 hands and 1,000 arms, to help. And we may be part of that. We can help too, just by doing our best. So let us just kind of keep the faith, keep a bright heart, do our best. Thank you.